Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here as always with Sammy Whittaker and Simon Anderson. Yo. Lads, how are we?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Yeah, we got, well, the NRL season's ended and I sort of thought that the podcast might start to slow down, but then I jumped on the tools earlier this week and I thought, oh my God, we've still got so much happening.
It
so,
ramps up. It keeps getting better.
Exactly.
The summer of sport has begun.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, no, well, I'm all good. Busy, so yeah.
Yeah, let's get into it, man, because we've got, you know, there's not just NRL left, like, gone from us.
Yeah.
But we've got the Pacific Nations Cup coming in too, so.
Exactly, which we will kick off with. So we've got the Kangaroos taking on Samoa this Saturday at 10 past 10pm. Now, the Kangaroos have four debutants. They've got Edwards and Cobbo on the wings and Hammer and Staggs in the centres. So DCE and Munster in the halves. Ben Hunt to start at hooker. And a bench that includes Harry Grant, Lindsay Collins, Pat Carrigan, and Ruben Cotter with Nico Hines, who was the poster boy, isn't in the starting, which was a bit funny to see. And then Samoa, they've got nine debutants. I won't name them all, but it's a pretty solid back five. Critter, named at 5'8 for the first time ever, and he's joined by Dejon Arce. And also, the young warrior, Ronald Volkman, is named as 17th man, which is interesting if he gets a little bit of game time at that international level in the number 7 jersey. So we'll discuss the game a little bit, and then I've got a few bets that are just placed on it that we can go through. But what do we think is going to happen here? We've got Critter named at 5'8 for the first time. He's following Luai's big boots after that World Cup performance. And we've got Edwards on making his international debut, but on the wing, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it's good to see a couple of these guys who are in sensational form all throughout the NRL season get their shine and get a chance, like Dylan Edwards, which is a real big one. I kind of saw the initial naming of the squad because he was a call-up to replace someone, right?
Yeah,
Addo Carr.
Yeah, he was a call-up to replace Addo Carr. And I saw the initial squad and it had Tedesco in there. And I thought, oh, man, you're still going to give Tedesco these opportunities instead of like your Edwards, your Pongers, your Reese Walshes, who have probably been better than Tedesco. But he does.
Mal spoken on that. And his thing is he's rewarding those guys that performed well in the international jersey prior to it. And that's just his thing in terms of loyalty rather than form. Because I thought the same thing as well. You've just got Walsh coming off the back of that. Ponga, who's just won the Dally M. Dylan Edwards, who's just an absolute freak. He runs a marathon throughout a game.
So, and that's just his running meters with the ball in hand.
Exactly. So I was the same. But he's obviously just giving them that opportunity at – we get the chance, though, to see him within the squad now, which is good to see.
Yeah, and in terms of Crichton, it is a big question mark for me because Samoa last year, Luai, for all his annoyances and faults that he has personality-wise, he was sensational for Samoa last year in the World Cup, and they're going to miss him dearly. And Crichton is a super talented player, and he's a really strong defender, which will be helpful in the halves position, which teams usually like to attack, but
he's not a ball player.
He's not a ball player.
And he's not a tactical kicker either. We saw Dejon Arce perform quite well for Parramatta in the absence of Mitchell Moses, but Dylan Brown was also taking over a lot of the kicking when he came back from his pub incident as well. But I agree, that's a big concern for them is the kicking game and the playmaking game, but lethal strike weapon.
You never know. I mean, same Penrith outfit. He could have been, you know, his understudy, picking up a few tips from his boy Luai in training.
True.
Have we seen his boot in action? I mean, because he's never really played
in the halves.
He's
a good goal kicker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you can strike it off the tee, I'm assuming you can, you know, put it in the...
And he was doing, in the grand final, he was doing nice weighted kicks to the end goal that put the Broncos under a lot of pressure. So.
They just weren't tactical ones. They weren't your cross field or your grubber. It was great executed kick.
Hey, maybe Cleary's holding him down.
Maybe. Yeah.
Let the butterfly fly away, man, in Samoan colours.
So do we know who's going to be the winger matching up against Edwards?
I don't have that off the top of my head. No. It might be Taulangi.
I was going to say, a potential aerial threat to that wing because he is a bit of a shorter
Very
human.
True, actually, yeah.
So potentially,
but he is quite good under the high ball.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, but... yeah, whether it could be something to exploit. Yep, yeah, for sure.
But Katoni Staggs, I'm really looking forward to seeing him perform 100%. In this one. I feel like he's just going to burst onto the scene and that. I'll go through a couple of my bets for it. So I've gone through the TAB for this one. I've jumped on the power play that they've got, and that is any two of Dylan Edwards, the Hammer, and Brian To'o score a try in the first half at $5.50. Okay. So that's any two of them. Australia, I've got them to win by 21 to 30 points, and that's at $3.40. And I've gone for a little bit of a try scorer with a bit more jam to it, and that's Liam Martin in at $3.20. I feel like he's going to pick something up nicely off DCE on that right edge, and he'll want to stick it to a few of those Penrith boys on the other side as well.
Yeah, good little rivalry there from within house. So, yeah, all the odds courtesy of our friends at the TAB this week. Australia, $1.05 favourites, and Samoa, $9 underdogs, with the line sitting at plus 21.5. And
it's a hefty line. Like, it is. That pack matches up really well. But then obviously you see that line come in the,
it is,
in the
but
back of it.
I also, the pack of the Australian team is stacked. And then what they have coming off the bench is stacked too. They've got Payne Haas in the starting lineup. And then they've got Ruben Cotter to come in and inject some, you know, intensity and speed into the game. It's just, it gives me an icky feeling about Samoa because this is not the same Samoa team that still lost by 20 points in the final of the World Cup last year. They're missing quite a few players, and especially in that halves position like we touched on.
Hence why I've gone that margin of 21.
And I'll have to agree with you. I've also gone with Australia to cover that 21.5 line at $1.87. It is super hefty. Wouldn't be surprised if Samoa does manage to sneak in it, but I think Australia is going to do a number on them.
Yeah, I think what we've seen with all representative rugby league, whether it's state of origin or at the international level, chemistry is a huge factor, especially with these kind of tight, short lead-ins. You rely on pairings and combinations, and that's where teams like Australia and Queensland have done really well. But just looking at the power plays, and Juicy, we were just talking about Taulangi, first, second or try scorer, and Hamisode anytime at $14.
Okay.
Wow, it's not that's bad. Quite nice, especially if they get out early.
You're back on the hammer's hammer.
Oh, never left.
I do like that you bring up, though, in terms of the consistency in the international game, because this wasn't the Australian international team, but a couple of weeks ago, the president's team played PNG.
Yeah.
And although the wind was an absolute howler, they got a real scare against them, and just a nitty gritty and PNG play a similar style to what Samoa will come out at, and the fact that they just bash them and bash them and bash them and defended outside. So it will be interesting to see how they go.
For sure.
Do you have a margin or a score prediction or anything that you want
to? I would probably say that line covers as well. Yeah, somewhere around 20 to 30 points.
Yeah.
Not exact
score. Kumbaya.
Nice. NPC semi-finals are now among us as well. So Taranaki, they take on Canterbury at Yarrow Stadium in New Plymouth. Both looking very, very good. I was quite impressed. My prediction in this one, I'll be going Taranaki at 1-12, $3.30 here.
Okay, so odds are Canterbury are the favourites away, $1.75, and Taranaki are the underdogs, $2.15, with the line sitting at plus 1.5. Canterbury last week beat Auckland 29-24 and Taranaki beat Tasman 34-18. And the match between these two in the regular season, Canterbury actually beat Taranaki 29-28 in Rangiora. Canterbury definitely have the finals experience in this matchup between the two because they've been in the playoffs 18 of the last 19 seasons.
Wow.
And they kind of showed that against Auckland, kind of turning that result on the head because it was kind of a back and forth contest, and then Canterbury scored some tries. Then Auckland made a late run to nearly take the game as well.
Sorry to jump in there. Zahn really impressed me. Zahn Sullivan. He's been really, really good this season. And we've got a lot of guys in the international scene that are leaving abroad. And a guy that may step up and be able to be a smoky to come into this team.
Yeah.
He's got a lethal left foot on him. He's very tall. Tommy Barham speaks really highly of him as well in the time that he's
You've been beating the drum for a while, the Zahn Sullivan. Yeah. You said he might be a smoky for the World Cup.
I did, and maybe not this World Cup, it'll be the next one.
They'd need a few injuries. Yeah. But also, shout out to Shawnee Stevenson, who has re-signed with the Chiefs. So it's good to see him in New Zealand rugby, and hopefully some more black jerseys are in his future. But back to the game. I think Naki are in the better form, despite the finals experience of Canterbury. They are the better defensive team, and you know I'm a stickler for defense wins championships. 21.7 points per game conceded to Canterbury's 27.1 points per game, and they're still dangerous on attack with the likes of, okay, bear with me here, Radu Namaivuki Nemkins and Kenny Naholo. So
The guy that you said first, he has burst.
What was his name?
He has burst onto the scene this year.
Yeah, he's had a fantastic season.
Former winger who's transitioned into the fullback, and he could blow up come Super Rugby.
Yeah, super talented, super fast.
And we'd spoken about Imani Nadawa doing that last season.
Yep.
Look at what's happened in terms of he's now over in the World Cup.
And still a Blues man, I'm assuming?
Yeah, for as next far season? As I'm aware
of. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a very talented player that we've got there. I'll back them here. I'll actually back Taranaki to get it done. They're in New Plymouth. The last game was in Rangiora, so kind of like, I'm guessing that's closer to Christchurch.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of neutral-ish, I guess. But Taranaki, 1 to 12, $3.30. That's who I'm going to ride here.
Nice, yeah. I mean, the Canterbury-Auckland game was real back and forth. I mean, like I said, but I don't think Canterbury can afford to let Taranaki back in like they did to Auckland. I mean, you mentioned Zahn. Another guy was RTS. He was quite... late in that game, quite trying to insert himself into everything. There was a lot of breaks and different opportunities to score that he was a part of. So it was really cool to see him show out in his last game in the 15-a-side format, and good signs for the Warriors. But yeah, I think, I mean, far out, man. 18 out of 19 years, it's hard to go against it. That kind of pedigree.
And then, they didn't make it. They finished fifth.
Yeah.
They just missed out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to back Taranaki at home here as well. I think that they've got the format to not let Canterbury get away on them like Auckland did. I think it's going much closer, and I think they're just going to have the opportunities to take this game away from them. I think it's going to be a lot lower scoring than the last game Canterbury played. I'm going to say it's going to finish around 20 to 18 or something like that. Okay. So 1 to 12 Taranaki is good value at $3.30.
Yeah, agreed. Now Wellington take on Hawke's Bay at Sky Stadium in Wellington. So Wellington looking red hot coming into this, and Hawke's Bay managed to get a second bump off their shield on that one, and they surprised me in that, which was good to see. They righted their wrongs, so take us away on those ones.
Yeah, so Wellington, $1.33 favourites, and Hawke's Bay, $3.40 underdogs, with the line sitting at +8.5. And yeah, like you said, Hawke's Bay did beat Wellington in the regular season, 20-18, to take the Ramphilly shield off them and then subsequently destroy it. But
along with their reputation.
Yeah, exactly. It'll sit bitter with Wellington, though, who... you know, haven't looked invincible. They did beat Waikato 32-28, but they had to fend off about 30 phases and five extra minutes just to hold on to that game. I'm not going to read too much into that, though, because Waikato is actually pretty good, and they just, you know, started the season real poorly, ended up in the eighth seed, and then had to take on the Wellington juggernaut that they are.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's back to my defense thing. They're the competition lowest points conceded with 14.8. They definitely look like the best team, but I will copy and paste my concerns from last week about Bay of Plenty versus Hawke's Bay, which ended up happening.
Yeah.
Hawke's Bay are dangerous and very unpredictable, and they could explode on Wellington and turn this result over like they did in the last game of the regular season. But to go against Wellington and that defense is, you know, it's more of a gamble. I'm going to back Wellington. They are the more reliable team. And I think they'll get a dose of revenge for what they did with the shield. Wellington, -8.5, $1.92 is what I'm going here.
Nice. So you're not looking at 13 plus?
No, I like the -8.5 because it sits right on that...
just over a conversion.
Just over a try, yeah.
Okay, so not a huge whooping of revenge, just a comfortable...
Well, kiss, I mean, on the
comfortable final.
Pat on the back.
I could honestly see a game similar to what they did against Waikato where they kind of stack some tries through territory and through just controlling possession and getting over the line with some mauls and stuff. And then, boom, second half, Hawke's Bay explode and get a couple of tries to, like, close that gap a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that last extra time, I guess you'd call it, in the Wellington game was just so...
Yeah.
I don't know how you describe it. It was entertaining for sure. The fact that they managed to get 30-plus phases together and then you could see it coming in. It's happened so many times in so many games where they lose it themselves. You know,
I will also say about Wellington... and they are the best defensive team by far, but I think they're about fifth in terms of attacking points per game. So
they've got strike.
They've got strike, but it's not like ridiculous strike power. Like Canterbury's, I think, 35 points per game and Wellington's around 29.
Yeah, so that all leads to a low scoring affair, like you're saying. I'm going to pick Wellington, get this done by a close margin. I'm going to put a bit more faith and get a little more juice out of it and go 1 to 12. That's $2.70.
Interesting. Yeah, I've jumped on Wellington wanting to give them a little pat on the back on their way out, and I've taken a bit of a punt on that. And I like the line at 8.5, but I've bumped that up a little bit, and I'm going Wellington 11-20 at $3.70.
Okay.
If they can kiss just over a try and a bit, then we'll might be in the money there. Rugby World Cup now.
Pool stages
over. In terms of just the main notable one is Portugal get their first win at the World Cup over Fiji, which is concerning for me, which we will talk about as we head into this, because they had a close call against Georgia and they just lost to Portugal. What are they going to do against England? Will be interesting.
Yeah. They're going to turn up.
Wow. Honestly, they're the type of team to do something like that. Like just looked like duds against some really lesser competition. And then once the lights turn bright, that's show all, out. Yeah,
agreed. Now, Wales take on Argentina on Sunday at 4 a.m. So the last three matchups between these two have been a win each and then a draw. I'll be taking Wales, though, just purely on form going into this. Argentina, I've been saying Japan could knock them out of it the week gone. So I've been impressed with how Wales have been sort of tracking to this, and they have got a favourable matchup here. So I'm going to be taking Wales in here. I'm going to take that line at -4.5 at $1.87.
Great minds think alike. Wales are the favourites, $1.47, and Argentina are the underdogs, $2.70, with that line sitting at +4.5. And I say great minds think alike because I am also taking that line at $1.87. Wales beat Argentina 20-13 in 2022, and they're just a team in much better form here. They're like a lot more clinical, a lot more structured. Their defense can kind of get a little bit dodgy at times, and Argentina do have a pretty good defense. And they do have the potential to explode like they have shown against Japan.
Yeah.
Their tries were really just like out of the blue, great individual efforts from some of their talented Argentinians. But I just got to back Wales here because I couldn't imagine Argentina in the form that they've been in with their inconsistencies being able to beat Australia 40-6.
Exactly.
So I'm going to back Wales here. I don't know if they'll destroy them, but I reckon it's a safe line take at -4.5.
Nice, yeah. I mean, this one's going to be interesting because you've got a very emotionally charged Argentinian side who will probably look to make this game as messy as possible, create a lot of those opportunities where they can score out of the blue, try and limit the phases and the set pieces that Wales will probably dominate if the game gets really structured. I mean, it's the same for every one of these quarterfinals. Pool play and the results that we've seen so far can't carry over too much because the style of footy is so different. You see every World Cup, everything gets far tighter, the penalties become much more valuable, and the game plan just becomes a lot more structured and strict. So that's where these North American teams and teams that can play like New Zealand and South Africa, that's where the pedigree rises to the top. So I'm going to pick that Wales do that. They've got Gatland, who's a fantastic coach, a great man in Anscombe at the helm. So I think, this one's going to be really tight. Argentina's going to do their best to loosen it up. But I'm going to pick a final scoreline with Wales winning 23-13.
Okay. Nice. Have they picked Anscombe to start at 10?
I'm not sure. I just assume he's been...
I haven't looked at the team list.
He's been there most of the time.
Yeah. Dan Bigger.
Dan Bigger is
their first five. Yeah.
Either way, when you've got either of those in your closet to come back on to close a game, it'll be very good. England take on Fiji Monday morning at 4 a.m. I'm going to leave the island All Blacks game until we get the end of it because we'll spend a little bit more time
event,
on that.
Exactly. The dessert.
the main event of dessert. Is that your favourite course in the meal?
What's that?
Dessert.
That's course. It's my own. I go dessert, dinner, and then second dessert. That's my eating schedule. Oh! is that why you haven't been uploading the videos?
Fiji had a historic win over England coming into the World Cup, but they've really gone stale against Georgia and then handing Portugal their first win ever at a Rugby World Cup, like we said earlier. So England do not play an exciting game of footy, but I think they have the edge here coming into it because of the brand that they've been playing and at this World Cup and with the results that we've seen. And also on the other side of that, with the results that we've seen Fiji's way in terms of a frustrating game style. Yeah. And if those two things collide, I think this is what where we'll see England come out. And that's where I'm going to put my money at -4.5 at $1.55. Ooh. I don't think that is the spread. I reduced it just a little bit.
You've chopped it.
Yeah, just because I'm worried about those flying Fijians.
Yeah, it's a fair worry. You do have England as the favourites, $1.33, and Fiji underdogs, $3.10, with the line sitting at +8.5. And yeah, England, I totally agree. They play a completely ugly brand of footy. Just go from set piece to set piece, really slow, kick for territory, kick for goal whenever they're within 55 meters. It's not very pretty to watch. They do have a very strong D though. Fiji, on the other hand, compared to other World Cups and compared to them traditionally, they have a lot more conservative sort of style of play. They do play a little bit more structured. They are more willing to like take the shots at goals, but they still show signs of that flair and then also carry super strongly, always getting over the advantage line. Probably a strong ball-carrying team as there is in this World Cup, up there with about South Africa, in my opinion, because, fuck, man, when they're carrying into contact, they always get over it, man, and they're fucking strong. So they could show up here. They did, like you said, have a couple of really red flag games which is why I'm actually going to pick England as well, because, you know, they lost to Portugal when they played really bad. England played really bad against Samoa, and they still won 18-17. A lot of refs shit happened in that game.
The concerning thing about the Portugal loss as well is not only is it just what it looks like on paper,
yeah.
Fiji needed to get a bonus point out of that as well. And for a second there, I was really thinking they're actually not going to get this, which was real concerning. When your World Cup hopes of progressing are on the line against Portugal, I had them at minus 20 and a half in that.
And obviously we're going to showcase, well, not showcase, but lowlight the deficiencies of Fiji because of their loss to Portugal, because they've obviously gone through and we have to preview them this week. But a lot of credit has to go to Portugal because they are a fantastic team. They play a really exciting brand of footy. They play a more exciting brand of footy than Fiji have at this World Cup. I don't know if that's a hot take or not, but they've been one of the gems of this World Cup. So shout out to Portugal. But you've unfortunately made me go back against my Fijian semi-final prediction. I'm going to go England 1-12. They've also got that French ref, Renal, reffing them. And you know what French refs like to do? They like to slow down the game.
Yep.
They like to have their whistle in their mouth.
It doesn't leave.
And it's not going to suit Fiji at all. So I'm going to go England 1-12, $2.90.
Nice. Yeah, I see this is the most diverse in the style matchups of the quarterfinals, where you've got a more spiritually, emotionally charged Fijian side versus the England team. And you know, we were talking about the most boring version. It's almost like you could say they've been playing finals footy the whole World Cup throughout the pool. They've played with a huge importance on securing territory and not leaving without points, even if it's just three. So they're not scoring as many tries, but they've definitely got the most amount of reps and out of all the other teams in playing games and winning close. So that's probably what's going to serve them well in these next few games if they get through Fiji, which I'm picking they do. I mean, I think this game's going to be the most exciting and amped up 20 minutes of the finals. That we'll see Fiji just come out super hot, carry really hard. And if they can maintain position, then they'll definitely worry them. But what I'm worried is going to happen is that there's going to be plenty of set plays, lots of breakdowns, and England's going to dominate. And by the end of the game, there'll be a sizable margin. I'm thinking the final score is going to end up somewhere around 20-24-12 in favor of England. I'm going to back the 1-12 margin, and let me just check my notes. $2.90.
Okay. Nice.
France, they take on South Africa Monday morning at 8 a.m. Just quickly before we preview the game, I'm so gutted that these aren't on a Saturday, Sunday, just with it being over in the Northern Hemisphere.
What do you mean? You work on a Monday morning at 8 a.m.? Is it?
The Portaloo is in use.
Well, hopefully no one from my work is listening to this, but I have been watching the morning games and then starting my day.
I've had a good setup at work. I've just been connecting to the speaker, having it up, and then just going as I go.
Oh, yeah, we've been in the boardroom, eh? Big, massive, like 80-inch TV in the boardroom, big screen for the World Cup, or for the All Blacks games.
Well, during World Cup season, they should just make Mondays off.
Exactly. Yeah. At Matt Clark Plumbing, do something.
And they should have three World Cups a year.
Yeah. At Matt Clark Plumbing, sponsor the potty or give Sammy the day off.
Or both. So France take on South Africa Monday morning at 8 a.m. So DuPont is expected to return. For me, this is a concern for France against a dominant South African pack. It'll be a very physical game, and DuPont's style of play will be very much hindered with this injury as well. I think this could be an upset, despite the red hot form, the home crowd, and everything that's going against it. But in terms of the whole grand scheme of it, I'm not bold enough though to just pick South Africa straight on the nose with it. So I'm going to take the +7.5 line at $1.40, because if DuPont is ready to go and that crowd gets behind them and it starts flowing, then the floodgates could open. But I do like South Africa's chances in this one, out of all the matchups, being the underdog.
Okay, so you are right. South Africa are the underdogs, $2.05. And France are the favourites, $1.77, with the line sitting at +1.5. France did beat South Africa in 2022, the last time they played, 30-26. And I think the quality of the French team is kind of going under the radar, because they play great attacking rugby. They have beautiful offloading and interplay and support play. They have really good kicking game as well. And that's where I kind of disagree with DuPont maybe having a lesser effect. His biggest weapon to me is his box kicking ability.
Yeah.
He has a cannon of a box kick that sends it down 50, 60 meters every time. And it killed the All Blacks in that game. So I think as long as his kicking game is not affected too much.
Yeah.
Which it won't be. It's a fucking broken jaw. Exactly.
I just more mean as sniping around the ruck. Yeah, he's very active in that, and he's a very active scrambler on defense as well.
Exactly. So, and if he does end up in one-on-one situations on defense, he could be a little wrong side. Yeah, he could be a little bit hesitant. So there are those factors, but I think his boot will come into play here. South Africa are like England plus. Yeah. Like, they play a pretty ugly style for the most part, but I just see from them the strongest defensive team in the World Cup for starters, but also they've got a little bit more willingness to attack and a little bit more threat on the edges than England. So it's like England times, I'm going to say times by two, because I don't really rate England that much. But I still think that France at home, with DuPont coming back, with that kicking, with them having, you know, a tough New Zealand test, so they're not going to be surprised by any attacking that the South Africans do, because they face some of the, you know, most dangerous attack in the world in New Zealand. And with also the controversy that was kind of surrounding South Africa for the last couple of weeks in terms of them maybe not being able to represent their country.
Exactly.
Or
neutral jersey, no national anthem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Has there been any update on that? Or?
Not that I've seen. It kind of just burst on the scene and then just got... It just disappeared.
I guess swept under the rug. Yeah, they'll just come out in blank white shirts, no national anthem, and
yeah, have the title stripped once it's all said. Yeah.
Oh fuck, man, that would. So just for the culture of rugby and just for the credibility of this Rugby World Cup, we can't have South Africa win. So that's going to be the closing point. France 1-12, $2.60.
Nice. Yeah, this one besides our own is probably going to be my favorite to watch, because I think it's going to be the closest.
Yeah.
You know, by a decent margin. I think this game will play out very slow. Not in terms of the pace, but in terms of the scoring pattern. I think a lot of back and forth penalties. These teams are going to take the three any chance they get and not risk trying to push, you know, going kicking into the corner and try for a pushover. They'll take the threes as often as they can get them. I don't see many tries because, like you said, both these teams defend supremely well. I think South Africa do get over though, with their neutral jerseys and without their anthem. So I'm actually picking a really low score here with 18 to 12.
Yeah.
So yeah, 1 to 12, South Africa gives you a nice $3.
Yeah, they're not the Springboks anymore. They're the South African football team.
Yeah, the full rebranding.
The Commanders. Yeah.
Like those, and they've got the strapping tape with it written on.
Like the off-brand football games, whatever it was. If it wasn't FIFA, it was like Supreme Soccer or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They had like the fake names.
Yeah.
Ireland, they take on the All Blacks on Sunday at 8 a.m. So Ireland have won two of the last three, which you will all remember in their historic victories against us last year. Number one team in the world right now, and have been in great form in this Rugby World Cup, and especially leading into this. So All Blacks though, as an underdog, is so tasty. If my sources are correct, Mark Talia is suffering an injury, so it's looking like Lester Fianga-Nuku will be slotting in.
That's no loss. Yeah. No loss at all.
No loss at all, but it looks like they are potentially going to go with Finlay Christie over Cam Roygaard. The team is named at 5 a.m. tomorrow morning, so it'll be interesting to see if that source is correct, but I really like our chances here. I feel like this is not only the World Cup thing, but it's a redemption on everything that's sort of happened leading into it, the noise surrounding it as well. We are a powerhouse rugby nation and do not want to be dominated by this island country that has never made it out of the quarterfinals. And I think it will stay that way. And I'm going to take New Zealand head to head at $2.
So, like you said, New Zealand are the underdogs, which is crazy to see. I know we haven't been a great team lately, but an underdog against Ireland, you'd have to check the record books because I don't know if that's ever happened before. But
I think it did.
It has?
After the first loss to them last year.
Damn, yeah. Okay. Well, that's some bold bookies. And I guess it paid off. Ireland are the favourites, $1.80, and the line is sitting at +1.5. And for me, this is the second most important game of the entire tournament, obviously behind the World Cup final that will eventually come. But the only team to have a winning record against the All Blacks since the 2015 Rugby World Cup. You said they've won two of the last three. They've won five of the last eight, which is actually kind of crazy. They're also a small country. I looked it up. Their population isn't much bigger than ours as well. So it's kind of wild how we're here with two teams with such small playing populations being so highly regarded in an international sport.
I wish we'd won that pool matchup so we could meet them.
Yeah, in the final, and it'd be super special for everyone.
Much more poetic.
Instead, someone some fan base, some country, a small country that deserves better is going to get knocked out early. Unfortunate. And I think it's going to be us because we've shown way more red. Oh, look, we'll see you next week then. Hold that energy. I've seen way more red flags from us. Our structure falls apart against great defense. Ireland has that. We give away heaps of breakdown penalties. Ireland are clinical against poor discipline. We play a little too much in our own half. Ireland can string multiple phases together. They go 10, 12 phases, do little wraparound plays and score tries. We saw that against Scotland. I can see this as, well, I'm not saying we don't have a chance. Let me just get that straight up, because I can see this as like a Panthers versus Broncos situation. Do we have the ability to just explode on Ireland and score some great individual tries and get this result? Yes, but who ultimately won that grand final and who usually wins more of the time in that situation? That's how I kind of simplify this game as a defensive, structured, complete team against an explosive, talented team.
That concedes.
I'm going to have to back Ireland, man. I think they're just the more accurate team. Ireland 1-12, $2.80. Renounce my citizenship if you need
me. Yeah, we'll be here bright and early coming for your passport, mate.
Absolutely.
I was a little bit worried because of one of my notes here. When Sammy started saying he was back in the All Blacks, I thought, oh, I'm preaching to the choir here. But JT and everybody else listening who's a little bit nervous, listen in. All right, the numbers and the statisticians tell you this one's already over. Comparable performance in the pools show Ireland as the favourites, a historically shocking winning record against us leading into the World Cup. The bookies and the bettors are saying Ireland 1-12 and Ireland to get up. But what if all of this? What if all of these chips stacked up against us are just chips on our shoulder? What if this is exactly where we're supposed to be? What if all of this energy coming towards us is what we wanted and what we needed to finally get the job done and take the head off this Ireland beast? I think we are a team with the mental fortitude, the passion and the understanding that this is a game we need to win and we have the ability to do it. So I'm picking All Blacks come out with some fire, some heat, and the chance to absolutely whoop this Ireland team. I'm picking 32-16 scoreline, All Blacks 13+, at a nice and healthy $5.
Okay, nice. Wow. That was very inspirational. So you're basically saying that you're picking New Zealand because we want it more.
I'm picking it because
why don't they want it? They've never been past the quarterfinal.
No, but it doesn't mean as much.
Why?
No, we've been there.
Why
know
doesn't
this.
It mean as much?
I'm not.
This
disagree.
Is like I'm. Just, I heard this. No, I'm sorry. I'm getting passionate because I heard this on the breakdown.
Get passionate for the right
I've heard
team.
This, yeah, I know. Yeah. But I heard this on the breakdown, like Jeff Wilson and John Kerwin and stuff, and they were saying the same things, like this means so much for us, like that we can't lose. And I was thinking, like, what?
It means
like,
different.
We're such main characters. Like, there's another team in this equation.
Ireland want this, and Ireland have never been there, and they've prepared perfectly for this moment and built solely around this run for this Rugby World Cup, but they've just come up against the wrong side of the draw in this one, I find. This is a situation where these guys have been in before in terms of the experience that we have in our pack. And just the experience alone that we have in our pack, the form that some of our players are in. Adi Savia, I think, is going to be inspirational in this. Richie Mwanga is going to be clinical. Beauden Barrett's been there at multiple World Cups and done it before. We've got X Factor that's coming off the bench that's going to, in DMAC, that could break the ice open in there. Got powerhouse wingers out wide. The only thing, like you said, is discipline. And for me, the only concern is the front row club and whether that can sort of hold its own. But
our scrum's been good. Our scrum's been good. Offer's been all right, but yeah, you bring up experience, but I think Ireland are the second oldest team in this whole competition, and they've got Pete O'Mahony, they've got that Van der Flair, like they've got, their caps probably match up, their cap, if not more.
Christmas
Jonathan Sexton, 38 years old, like.
Yeah.
If I was to summarise my point into one thing that I think everybody needs to know and understand is, we can't have players who played in the domestic cup and didn't make international honours or didn't survive international honours beat an all-black team full of absolute superstars and incredible talent. James Lowe, Bundy Aki, yeah, maybe they're all right.
That's a low blow.
But we can't let it happen. It's just from a reputational standpoint. And yeah, Ireland won it because it's unheard of. They've never done it before. But the All Blacks needed a boogeyman. We've dominated World Cups. We dominated. We fell short last time. We need this, and we needed a team you know, we needed to take it personally. That's how I want to describe it. We turned into MJ mode and we're taking any opportunity to put those chips on our shoulder and use it as fuel.
I hate being this guy as well, but I was watching an interview with Ian Foster the other day, and just what he was saying didn't fill me with hope. And I was like, this guy talks really generic and really doesn't like say a whole lot. Maybe he's holding his cards close to his chest, but I just read it and thought, fuck, we got a poo-poo head coach, bro. So I'm not filled with faith, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the bizarre thing of just like giving the kicking tee away just because he's like, oh, I want to make sure he's fresh and just playing mind games with telling D-Mac, you know, that it was Nuggy that told him he didn't tell him, just to cause weird sort of...
It seems banter. A bit of cheeky. Yeah. But this game does have blockbuster written all over.
Yeah, for sure.
The final came early and I can't wait to see the result.
And it's two teams with chips on their shoulders. Exactly. That's what makes it so... It's like Volkanovski versus Makhachev. It's two teams that absolutely believe they can beat the other team.
Exactly.
And want to.
And there's a lot of history between it as well. Moving on, though, the best bets from that one. I've gone Wales -4.5 at $1.87. All Blacks head-to-head at $2. England -4.5 at $1.55. And South Africa +7.5 at $1.40. If you multi all that up together, that's $8.11 on the nose.
Okay, my best bets are Wales -4.5 at $1.87. Ireland 1-12 at $2.80, England 1-12 at $2.90, and France 1-12 at $2.60. And I don't have the total odds, but
nice. My best bet, the only one you need to care about, is All Blacks 13+ at $5. Up the ABs.
You're just taking it just that?
Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't write down the odds there. I was just looking at the TAB.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. Moving on to the NFL. So TAB featured bet. We had a win last week, which was good. So. Back to the touchdowns is where we are going. So Tyreek Hill against the only winless team in the NFL right now, and that is the Carolina Panthers. The Cheetah has been in red hot form, so we are expecting him to cross over here. The Jets, they have never beaten the Eagles, and we don't think that changes this week, but we're backing DeAndre Swift to reach the end zone in that one, and Gabe Davis, who scored a touchdown in his last four games, and in week six, the Bills take on the struggling Giants, so we're hoping Gabe crosses over there. Player performances, though, that pressed us. I'm going to be going Jamar Chase from the Cincinnati Bengals. He's been saying, I'm open, I'm always effing open, for a very long time now. And I tell you what, he was open in this one. 3 touchdowns on 15 targets. I think every single target bar one of those was to either go for a first down or a touchdown. So every single time he was touching the ball, it was just ridiculous. 192 receiving yards. He blew the roof off the fantasy score in that one as well. The Bengals offense that had been struggling lately, Jamar took it upon himself in this one and absolutely cut loose, showing the rest of the league that the Bengals should not be slept on.
No, and... there was like a feeling of inevitability that Jamar would eventually have a game like this because he has started the season off very slowly, but boy, oh boy, he didn't fucking start this game off slowly. He exploded, man. And this is the player that we're more likely going to see going forward. He is a sensational talent, super fast, underrated speed. Well, not underrated, but I think people sleep on how fast he is and his ability to get open. He had how long was that touchdown? It was about 60-70 yards or something, and an absolute dime from Joe Burrow. So shout out Chase, man. It's an impressive performance after a slow start. I'm going with DJ Moore from the Chicago Bears, and Machu's favorite player this week, definitely, because he had 49 points in fantasy and they smashed the Commanders 40-20 in kind of a surprising upset. I mean, the Bears might be turning a corner here, but still, to put 40 on the Commanders, who are usually a pretty good defense, is actually quite impressive. And he was sensational in this game. He was actually traded to the Bears for the first draft pick, Bryce Young, and 4 other draft picks. And is 7th in the whole NFL in receiving yards since 2018. And in this game, we got a glimpse of why, because 230 receiving yards on 8 receptions and 3 touchdowns as well. So a pretty similar stat line to Jamar Chase. Mm. Great leaping overhead catches for his last 2 touchdowns, bringing them in at full extension, and then great ability on the last one to catch it, regather, and then just take off. So, man, you can tell he's got the tricks of the trade. 45-yard touchdown for that one. And it looks like a pretty hefty haul of draft picks to get DJ Moore for this team. But if he continues having performances like that, he is more than worth it. And with Justin Fields looking like he's turning a corner, he could start having more games like this. I mean,
Confidence is huge.
Confidence, man. And Justin Fields does seem like a player that thrives off confidence and getting a good result. And now that they've gotten over the hump and they've got their first win of the season, there might be a little bit of freedom for him to play a little bit more. And DJ Moore could be on the receiving end of some quality performances going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Team performance that impressed us. I'm going to Detroit Lions against the Carolina Panthers. So you like this, a Detroit team.
Okay.
Finally featuring, but the Panthers...
We'll never be featuring the NBA team. Yeah.
The Panthers are poos, but it doesn't look like to me they'll even get a win this season. I'll be very surprised if they do. But Goff, Montgomery, and LaPorta have been very, very exciting to see what... To see in Detroit and what they can do this season. Jared Goff is so slept on at the quarterback position. He was huge in that Rams run to the Super Bowl in the 2018-19 season, and he was only stopped by the GOAT himself from actually winning that year. What he was doing with Detroit this season is great to watch. The offense is flowing really, really nicely. LaPorta, he is phenomenal. The tight end has a very, very big future, or bright future in this league. They will be top the NFC North for me this season.
Yeah, for sure.
In a very top-heavy NFC conference, I think they'll end up finishing in the third position as well.
Okay.
Because you've got Tampa Bay and a lot of others floating around there. Yeah, behind the two juggernauts, I think they're finishing top in there. But Detroit, I'm really, really impressed with them. If you watch some of their highlight plays, they're very, very creative in how they actually run their offensive line with the run game and the pass game. And we all know what happens with a quarterback and a gun tight end. They do very, very well.
Yeah.
And LaPorta has got a very bright future.
Okay, I haven't seen a whole lot of LaPorta, but shout out to him. He's obviously got high reps. And a lot of credit has to go to their coach as well, because that exciting creative play calling that you see is, I forget his name, is it Dan Campbell? I believe it is Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's... As soon as he came in, I believe last year was his first season, you could see Detroit start to turn a corner.
Yeah.
And I think they started something like 0-5, and then they went on that run and had a real strong end to the season.
Yeah.
So Detroit, good team. Good to see Detroit teams actually doing something, because the Pistons ain't been doing shit for a long time. So my city's got something. But a team that impressed me, and this is going to be a no shock to anyone, San Francisco 49ers, the game I highlighted last week as a potential clash of the Titans, turned out to be a bit of a mismatch, because they steamrolled the Cowboys 42-10. Their defense was dominant, intercepting Dak 3 times. Their offense was unstoppable, even with, you know, a quiet by his standards game from McCaffrey.
He got subbed out early.
Still got the touchdown, though, which was good for our multi. And then they are just the most stacked team I've seen in a long time. And it's because they've got a really, I'm going to say it twice, a really, really good budget quarterback and Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy, sensational in this game. 252 yards, 4 touchdowns, 144 passer rating, 83.5 QBR, leads the league in passer rating by a mile. And I've heard some, you know, some of those TV shows, Undisputed, First Take, I've heard some of those kind of putting it out there that Brock Purdy might be in the lead for MVP. He's getting some traction.
He's just jumped from, I think, in week 4, he was $12.50. He's jumped up to $7.50 now. So,
oh, okay.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, so...
Well, not that crazy, I don't think.
It's not that crazy, because he is super efficient, and he's kind of like the perfect piece for this creative attacking team. Yeah, we talked about it earlier this week on chat. Kyle Shanahan, just a really innovative play caller with his running game, and the weapons he has at his disposal as well, he's getting perfect use out of them. And because Brock Purdy is so cheap, this is the kind of team they're dealing with here. Christian McCaffrey on offense. Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, who had 3 touchdowns in this game, and Brandon Ayuk. And then on defense, they've got Nick Bosa, Defensive Player of the Year, Talanoa Hufanga, Javon Hargrave from the Eagles last year, and Fred Warner. Bro, is there a better roster that you've seen in the last couple of years?
Not at all.
It's crazy, right?
It's just stacked everywhere.
And I'm going to throw another hot tucky out there. The San Francisco 49ers will go undefeated this season. Their hard games, well, they've got the Bengals in a couple of weeks, but who knows what Bengals team is going to show up. Eagles and Philly, that's one I circled as a potential loss, but Eagles just don't give me the same vibe as they did last year.
As well.
Yeah, and they'll show up for that game like they showed up against the Cowboys. And the Ravens could be another game that is a little sketchy. But other than that, it's not a hard schedule. I think the San Francisco 49ers could go undefeated.
I think the last team to do that might have been the Carolina Panthers led by Cam Newton, who was the MVP that season.
I think they dropped a game.
It might have been, yeah.
They were 14-1 or 15-1 or something. Yeah.
I like that tape, though, yeah. I don't think it will happen. I think they'll have the same sort of situation.
It's obviously on the line.
Game we want to feature in the upcoming round. I'm going 49ers versus the Browns. So the 49ers, unbeaten coming into this one. Only other team is the Eagles. The Browns, though, they come into this with a 2-2 record. But this game, for me, is one to watch for the defense side of it. The 49ers are giving teams absolute headaches. And Watson has thrown a few picks already in 2023. But like you said, it's the quarterback on the other side of this one. And Cleveland, they do have a jacked up defense of their own, which will really test out Purdy in the pocket. And I'm picking Purdy will silence them and Mr. Irrelevant haters. So he's been incredible so far this season. Just last week, like you said, 4 touchdowns, 17 from 24 on passes completed per attempt, 0 interceptions as well against a gun Dallas defense. So that's in the pass rush, and you've got a different beast on this one. It's going to be a very interesting one. I think the 49ers will take this one out, but don't sleep on it because this is one that could be a bit of a test for them.
And shout out Brad. He had a hot take. He said Cleveland is the best defense in the competition. And some of their results, I think, a 24-3 victory over the Bengals and then also another really tidy victory over someone else. I can't remember who it was.
It's not a highlight play defense in terms of the sack and the intercepts and all of that, but it's very balanced throughout. And they put pressure on the quarterback position, which is what I'm really excited to see.
And another man who might have a tough time is Christian McCaffrey. Yep. So we'll get to our multis in a bit, but he's actually not my anchor this week, which...
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I know. I like to ride things until the wheels fall off, but...
Simon's still got a hold of his hammer, but you're flirting with Christian.
Yeah, Chris Him is no longer in the multi. So the highlight game for me this week is the Cowboys at the Chargers, and the Cowboys are looking to bounce back on Monday Night Football after that embarrassment from the 49ers, and Dak Prescott is kind of in the hot seat at the moment, and he'll be wanting to... you know, bounce back after 3 intercepts and a lot of people kind of calling for his job at the moment, saying that we've done this whole routine for years and years on end and it's getting us nowhere. You throw too many interceptions. We're kind of hitting our ceiling in the second round or the first round of the playoffs with you at quarterback.
You know what's wild about that is we've been talking about CJ Stroud, the young quarterback that hasn't thrown an interception to start the season yet.
In his whole career.
Exactly, So he's just overtaken and the lead in that. And the guy that he overtook is Dak Prescott, who is now catching up later in his season by throwing pick after pick after pick. Hopefully he doesn't end
making up
for
lost time.
Exactly.
And it'll be interesting to see how the Cowboys' defense responds as well, because like the 49ers, the Chargers have a pretty high octane offense. They've got Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, Justin Herbert, Josh Palmer. And they're always an entertaining watch because their coach, Brandon Staley, plays a really risky brand of footy. Kind of bit them in the ass in the playoffs last year. But he loves to go for it on 4th and short meters or even 4th and like longish meters sometimes, depending on where they are in the field. And they're coming off a bye, so they're going to have a few things worked out in the playbook. It's going to be a dangerous game, especially for the Cowboys going to Los Angeles. I'm not confident enough to pick who I think would win yet, but I'm going to Chargers. I'm going to be leaning Chargers for now, but it is high stakes, big questions to be answered, and entertaining footy all wrapped into one on Monday Night Football. So
it's prime time. There's one guy that plays well in prime time, and there's one guy that doesn't play well in prime time.
Oh, shit.
Chargers win that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's big time Herbert, is he?
Yeah. That guy's a dog. Top 5 power rankings. So last week I had the 49ers, the Eagles, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Chiefs. This week is very, very similar. I've got in top position 49ers. Second position, I've got the Eagles. Third, I've still got the Bills. They were disappointing against the Jags in London, so I'm not sort of reading into that too much. Dolphins, I've got them in at 4th. And then 5th, just because I want to make it interesting, I've got Detroit in there.
Okay. That's not too bad because Detroit have been rolling. They're 4-1. They're actually looking pretty good. Yeah, last week I had the 49ers in at 1, the Kansas City Chiefs in at 2, Buffalo Bills at 3, Philadelphia Eagles at 4, and then Dallas Cowboys at 5th. Bit of shuffling and changing this week, but still pretty much the same. At number 5, I have the Miami Dolphins, who are now 4-1. They got a good win over the New York Giants, so they're kind of getting back on track after being embarrassed by my next team, which is the Buffalo Bills, who are kind of just holding on to their spot at number 4 at 3-2. they're the highest ranked 3-2 team in my list. They still did show out against Miami last week, and Jacksonville are starting to turn a corner. Weird things happen in overseas games like in London. I'll keep them at number four. At number three, I got the Philadelphia Eagles, who are 5-0. They just keep getting these results. They're a quality team. They're obviously well coached. 5-0 speaks for itself. Got to have them at three and pushing really hot on the heels of my number two team, which is the Kansas City Chiefs at 4-1. They're the current champions, and they've still been getting wins no matter how close it's been. They're still getting the results, so got them at two. And then there is a Mount Everest gap between number two and my top spot, which is who I highlighted before, the San Francisco 49ers, completely stacked and undefeated, and will remain that way for the rest of the season, in my opinion.
Nice. touchdown parlay. So last week I had Derrick Henry, Tyreek Hill, and Higgins. He got ruled out, so I actually adjusted it to Chase, but I still missed on Derrick Henry, which he got stuffed on the goal line as well. So the total odds for that were $5.24. This week, I'm going to change it up. I'm going to go all tight ends on this one. So I've got Dallas Goedert against the Jets, Laporta against the Buccaneers, and Cole Kemet against the now tanking Vikings as well. So okay, we'll get those odds up for next week.
Yeah, and last week's touchdown multi, I hit again. Tyreek Evans. Imagine that. Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey, and Travis Kelce. So yeah, 3-3 there. And then this week, I've got running back Isaiah Pacheco from the Chiefs. They're taking on the Broncos. We have a terrible rush D, so I think he might get one there. Tyreek Hill, who is going to be my anchor in place of Christian McCaffrey, they're taking on the Panthers, and Tyreek's speed is just getting him so open, so I could see him getting another touchdown in this one. And then Gabe Davis, I'm going to follow some information that you told me and the information that we've kind of backed in terms of our TAB bet. Four touchdowns in four straight weeks. They're taking on the Giants, who are kind of a little bit dodgy this year. So I'll back Gabe Davis until the wheels fall off, unlike Christian McCaffrey, get another touchdown in a week. So yeah, that's my three-leg multi.
Before we potentially head to Simon's corner, Tyreek Hill, because he's cutting everyone up to pieces, I reckon it's because he's wearing no socks. He's just got less material on him. And so it's like back-to-back weeks where he's just wearing no socks. He's getting ridiculous fines for it at the moment, and he's just still on
7,500? Oh, no, what was it?
It was 7,500, and I think he just got hit with a 10K one, and he's still tweeting no sock gang.
What's 10K to him?
Exactly. what's the touchdown bonus per game? Surely they must get paid.
That is true. He's probably, he's going for the receiving yardage record this year, which he'll get a hefty bonus on that. So maybe he's seen a little bit of, I'm going to shave and ditch the socks and I'll reach that. But anyway, Simon's Casual Corner.
Yeah, Casual Corner, welcome. We've got one story or one topic I want to breach, and this is purely out of some social media scrolling that I stumbled across his players. I think the Atlanta Falcons he plays for, bit of an interesting name. I think it's Bijan.
Bijan.
Bijan Robinson. Yeah. So this social media credited him with potentially single-handedly saving the running back position. I put together a highlight package of some of the footwork that man has compared to like old school high school touch highlights of Sean Johnson. That man's probably got some of the sharpest footwork, like the ability to catch and stop on a dime and handbrake harder than any other person I've seen in
handbrake in a good way.
Not running into contact, but to handbrake to see a fella fall on his face in front of him and then run through. And then also the kind of Kyrie Irving behind the back
that
receiving.
Nice
I want to know your opinions. Is that an early hot take, or does he actually have some long term career brilliance ahead of him?
I'll just jump in there because you dissect that more, but they should just watch a Christian McCaffrey highlight reel because he's saving the running back position.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway,
that's exactly where I was going to start as well. I think that's a little bit too far out on the edge to say that this rookie is personally saving the running back position, because we have some talented guys in the league, a la Christian McCaffrey, who is proven himself to be a potential MVP candidate. So I'm not just going to hype this kid up that much and put that on him, but in terms of a talent, yeah, I'm really high on him. I think he is special. Like you said, you just do the eye test. The numbers haven't been too great like in the last couple of weeks. They started off pretty good, but you just do the eye test and you look at the footwork, you look at the catching ability, you look at the ability after catch. He is special, man. And I compared him a couple of weeks ago to Barry Sanders in the way he moves, who, if you haven't seen him, he's an old head. Look up his highlight, Detroit Lions, former running back, former MVP as well, I believe, or co-MVP, something like that. But yeah, he is super talented. I am high on him. He will be a problem in this league.
Just Fantastic. To touch on the Falcons as well, just in general, they're an exciting team for the future. The Drake London is got a very bright future ahead of him. They've got the tight end game going now with dual threat tight ends in terms of sharing the position. And you've got Bijan that's a freaky at the running back position. So if they can land themselves a gun quarterback, they'll be dangerous moving forward. But yeah, he's not saving the running back position. He's doing it justice because he's going to carry it through. Yeah. But the torch hasn't been passed yet.
Not quite yet. But are they in the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes?
Nah, I think it's the Jets.
Okay.
I think anyone that's going after Kirk Cousins is sort of wanting to make a quick immediate fix instead of the future. And I see the Jets as sort of just a team. They invested heavily in Dalvin Cook when they still had Breece Hall. They wanted to really sort of get something over the board. So for me, that's someone that will go real aggressive into it. I don't really see anyone else off the top of my head that's sort of floating waters around the quarterback. Yeah, Dak. But they've invested in Trey Lance there as well by bringing him in. Maybe the Raiders to get Devante a little bit more touches because Jimmy hasn't really got his number at the moment. I think he had, in the first half, it was one or two targets just in that game. So
he's more going Myers, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So be interesting to see who makes that play, but... Anyway, UFC.
UFC. So, before we get into the fight from the weekend, there's been some hot news in the UFC lately. So, next week there is a card in Abu Dhabi, which the main event was scheduled to be Islam Makhachev versus Charles Oliveira 2. Unfortunately, Charles Oliveira just this week has suffered a cut in the fifth round of sparring. So, whoever was sparring him is going to be in some fucking hot water.
Bro, you're either
from
throwing
Charles and his team, but... Anyway, he has got a cut. He hasn't been able to go on his flight. They've stitched it up. They've stitched it up wrong. So it's something that maybe could have been avoided, but they've obviously fucked it up. So now he's out of the fight. And stepping up in his place on 10 days' notice is my favorite fighter, the baddest man on the fucking planet, Alexander Volkanovski, for his rematch against Islam Makhachev. Now, thoughts on this? Are you... more excited than the Charles Oliveira fight, or
yeah, 100%. As a personal, I mean, I don't claim to call him as such a favorite fighter as you do. I just don't want to steal that honor from you. But I love him. I love Volk.
You can do it though. Is he?
What do you mean?
Is he number one?
Yeah, Simon loves lots.
I like to share my love around.
Top five's got 20 fighters.
He's got, you know, third A and third B. But Volk, in terms of just current UFC roster, he is the baddest man on the planet. He is my favorite. The fighting style, the way he approaches his fights and just everything. There is no hole in him as an athlete, either in the cage or outside the cage. He's just such a complete package of an athlete to watch. So compared to Oliveira, I mean, it would be really nice to see a rematch because we didn't really get to see how that fight unfolded properly because Oliveira acted like an idiot, throw some weird jumping knee, ended up on his back and got choked out quite quickly.
He does that though. That's him.
Yeah.
That's him. He just, he found his kryptonite.
But but I mean, in terms of the rematch, we saw Volk go the distance. There was a lot of people in the media who scored it in favor of Volk. So this is a true chance for him to really prove that he is the baddest. And 11 days notice, going into enemy territory, all alone. It's fairy tale stuff. If he manages to get it done, it'll be crazy. But
and we'll talk more on this next week when we preview the UFC. But what's your temperature on him replacing Oliveira? Do you like it more?
Yeah, I like it more. I said to you, I feel like this card's just gotten a lot more entertaining.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
The matchup sort of that we've been given, he's being thrown, like you said, into the fire to come out with this. I would, you want him to have more time to prepare for this kind of thing, especially if he's going to go in there and get his flowers. But I'm all aboard. I love it. So the respect for him has just gone up another level.
And you talk about this card getting more exciting for you. Mm. There's been another replacement fight, and it could potentially, it probably is bigger than the fight that was initially scheduled. It was meant to be Paulo Costa versus Khamzat Chimaev. It is now... Paulo Costa has pulled out because he has had elbow surgery, which what do you think was going to happen 3 weeks out from the fight? Yeah. You think you're going to make it in time? So he's doing some dodgy stuff like he usually does in a fight week. But instead in his place is Kamaru Usman stepping up for his middleweight debut in the UFC on short notice. Also doing some badass stuff, which I don't really like Usman, but this is, you got to give credit to him here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The fact that he's stepping up.
Yeah, stepping up against a fucking dangerous fighter as well, a dangerous young fighter. Usman isn't that young either. Are you more excited for this one as well?
I mean, I like Costa because when you watch his fights, he stands, he trades, he throws bombs.
I do, but he gets on my nerves,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
it's always
just,
something.
Just to give him a little bit of credibility, right? So just the injury, the first one was he got a bursitis, which is an inflammation within his elbow joint, and he had surgery weeks ago to fix it, and he was healing up and he had full intention of fighting. But then what happens, he got a staph infection within the elbow, and the doctors couldn't medically clear him to fly, which means he couldn't make it in time to fight. So yeah, I mean, he had every intention to fight after the surgery, which you give credit to him for wanting to stick to it. But
also that is reasonable, but also there's always something. Like, he's the guy where there's always something.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
The boy who cried wolf, man.
Yeah, he's dodged a bullet and comes out. But I mean, this is a fantastic test for both fighters, right? Usman has always said he was toying with the idea of coming up to middleweight. Khamzat needs a serious wrestling opponent to stuff the takedowns and give him a proper, well-rounded fight. I mean, Burns gave him a great go for it. Different weight class, though, right?
That was down at welterweight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a different beast when Khamzat doesn't have to cut so aggressively, because we've seen him miss weight and do all sorts of fun, weird stuff. So, at a more natural weight for Khamzat, he's going to be – the gas tank's going to be even crazier. The pace is going to be much more crazy. But the matchup – from a fan perspective, is what I'd like to see, because these two guys can out wrestle each other if they have a great performance.
Yeah. Usman, I believe, has only been taken down by one person. That was Leon Edwards.
Yeah, exactly.
So, man, it's a crazy matchup. And I believe it's come out that the winner will take on Strickland for the middleweight title. So very interesting stakes on the line. Are you more excited for this one?
Well, especially with the news on that, because if Usman's coming up for that and then gets a shot at the title straight away, what a run.
And that's a rematch as well. He has beaten Strickland before.
Yes. Bro, the UFC are so big brain, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Or big script.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've known about this for ages.
But in terms of Chimaev as well, such an entertaining guy to watch. Yeah. His antics and the way
he... anybody.
Exactly. Yeah, the antics around it. And Usman is sort of a little bit of, like you say, he's a weird dude. Yeah. So how those sort of two meet in the middle and what that we get to see,
It'll be a good press conference too, because Usman doesn't tend to back down. He likes talking a bit of shit. He uses his movie voice. He always whispers.
His Wakanda voice. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, man. And this card, for me as well, has just gotten a whole lot better. But there was also some big news that kind of got tucked away underneath all of this, and that was that USADA is being dropped by the UFC come January next year. And I think you know some more information on that, so I'll let you speak on the whole situation there.
Yeah, so they were in negotiations to extend their contract post the 1st of January, which the last time they met was, and apparently the reports where everything was quite positive, was May earlier this year. And then the news comes out that the contract is ceasing as of the 1st of January next year. And then the CEO of USADA comes out with a pretty scathing statement around the UFC and the executives there, and potentially the Dana White privilege that some fighters get, namely one who's just entered the pool the other day, which is Conor McGregor. The statement basically says, in PC business terms, that there was a disagreement between the officials within USADA and the UFC regarding the mandatory minimum period of being within the pool before a fighter can take the cage and fight, which is 6 months. And that was specifically with a case of Conor McGregor. So basically, in short terms, because the UFC wanted Conor to fight sooner than 6 months without returning the tests, then they basically couldn't come to terms to extend their agreement. And the UFC said, thank you, see you later. So who knows what's going to happen. There was...
it's so dodgy.
He does a few Fight Night commentaries, but he also does a podcast, Brendan something.
Brendan Schaub?
No, not Brendan Schaub. Brendan Johnson?
Fitzgerald?
Brendan Fitzgerald. So he tweeted out saying that the testing procedure will still be in place, but they won't have USADA being the ones to facilitate it. So they're either going to bring it in-house and have their own testing team, or contract it out.
Just got a bottle of water straight.
So either that's been in the works and they have a replacement organization ready to go that they've wanted to and just couldn't kind of, you know, screw the wheels into USADA and say, look, you need to do this for us with Conor,
just
where you're going.
But just Link.
Yeah. But basically, they're still going to be testing. So, I mean, all the fighters, the stuff on Twitter's been crack up about Sean Strickland's been talking about, he's been like looking into different steroids. And everyone's been saying, you know, Vitor's coming back.
Overeem's coming back.
Yeah.
Lesnar's coming back.
Oh, there's a good photo. It was like Conor McGregor at featherweight on one side and then his current status. And it was like fighters at the end of December versus fighters after January.
They're going to have to cut out the flyweight, the bantamweight division. They're all moving up, just pure muscle monsters.
Yeah, here comes super heavyweight.
Shout out to USADA, though. They will get opportunities with other big federations if they put their foot down. And I'm assuming they will, because their whole relationship with the UFC was kind of dodgy already.
Yeah.
But them putting their foot down on this situation is kind of gives them some integrity. So
exactly.
I think they will get another opportunity with some other big sporting agency.
It's early days. Just very early days. And for all we know, they could end up getting a contract done and everyone just goes, oh, just jokes. Well, you can use them.
Yeah. They're just doing it so Conor can come back in January and then, oh, wait, USADA's back in February.
Yeah. That was my exact first thought that was going to happen. Oh, they're just going to pretend to be feuding. Conor's going to fight and then they're just going to join up again.
Yeah.
And all the fighters are going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I mean, I'd hate to be versus some juiced up monsters in that small time period. Yeah. Everyone's just going to have to get on a cycle just for that small time period.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, there was a fight in the weekend. Well, kind of a fight. Bobby Green defeats Grant Dawson in round one by KO after 33 seconds with his unorthodox style, off rhythm boxing, catches him with a straight left off the southpaw stance. Perfect timing. Dawson wide open, so it shows that obviously, there's still a lot he needs to work on in the stand-up, because that shot should not have hit that clean straight on his jaw. But credit to Bobby Green. Perfect shot. Put him out. Matt, what are your thoughts on not much?
When I saw it, I was thinking, oh, man, JT kind of called it. Because the one thing that stood out was your comment. But the way that Bobby fought, like what you said last week was how he likes to fight with straight jabs from either stance. And that's how he kind of led into it.
That's not really a take. That was just more of an observation. Not really a take.
But, I mean, that's how happened. He fought, and that's what happened. You know, he was changing his stance, and it was his...
For 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Changed his stance about three times.
But I just thought, that's... JT said that's how he fights, and that's how he fought, and that's how he got the job.
Oh, yeah, bro, I'm watching, bro. Yeah. I'm watching.
You do be observant. Yeah. But, I mean, some of those kicks and strikes that Dawson threw in the short 30 seconds, so wide open. No setup. Yeah. He definitely looked outclassed in terms of the way you should approach a fight.
Yes, and he's going to have to go really back to the drawing board, and he might, for him, because his stand-up is really sus, I think he might just have to go the full Chimaev approach and just shoot double legs from the very get-go.
Yeah.
Because, he really exposed himself. You wouldn't think you're going to get knocked out in 30 seconds, but...
It happened.
No, there is the phenomena that within the first minute or so of the first round, people get sparked, right? Where they don't absorb anywhere near as much damage as they do over the rest of the fight. But that first clean power shot just shuts the lights off quickly and they get compromised. But then if they withstand that first exchange, then you'll see them go for the distance. So, it's the same thing with Adesanya, right? Like with the fight against Strickland, he got absolutely
that was like
rocked.
4 minutes in, though.
No, it's still the first round, and the amount of damage.
I agree with the first bit. You're starting to stretch the phenomenon out, but in terms
thank you, Sam.
Do you agree with him or do you agree with me?
No, I agree with Simon. Oh,
okay, so you're both wrong. in terms of what's next for Bobby Green,
you got to wear an Irish jersey next week.
Moicano. I've got calling him out and saying some kind of suspiciously racist things.
Oh, really? I missed that.
No, it wasn't like racist, but he was kind of saying like, hey, you know how Moicano is. He's like, hey, Bobby Green, I beat you. I take you out. You know, I support the police. He said that and it was kind of like, okay. Moicano, relax. But yeah, that's got a bit of heat to it now. Renato Moicano versus Bobby Green. I also think a good match would be Dan Hooker, which I did call for a while ago. It would be a really interesting match, but I think Moicano's kind of like staked his claim by making it
outrageous.
Money Moicano, man.
Yeah, well, all three of those fighters have talked about fighting each other because Moicano was lining up Hooker, and then Bobby, and then Hooker was like, "Yeah, let's go, Bobby." So it's a bit of a love triangle.
Yeah,
in terms of Bobby Green, there's quite a few. I mean, Jalen Turner just lost a hooker. He needs a spider.
Yeah.
That's a few steps up.
That is a real interesting match.
It would be. I mean, the length would be crazy because Bobby is a striker.
Yeah, I could imagine Bobby struggling.
Yeah, yeah. Those kicks would just come out of nowhere for him. RDA's just been holding onto a spot for far too long up there. Maybe he needs to go.
Yeah, he's kind of taking fights at welterweight now, so he actually shouldn't even still be in there.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want Bobby Green looking too far up the rankings.
Nah, he's only just got into the rankings now. So you've got Dawson, on the other hand. I've saying he should fight the winner of either Frivola and Benoit Saint-Denis. So, yeah, he's kind of in a weird spot now because he has such a boring style. He needs to kind of take on, like, these young upcoming contenders because that's who the UFC is going to feed him. So I say it's either one of those two. Saint-Denis has been on a roll, and I think he'll probably win that. Well, Frivola's pretty good. I don't know. I'm not going to give a take yet. But, yeah, winner of that one.
Yeah. I mean, he's sitting right at the end of the rankings of the top 15. He's going to gatekeep until he can prove that one. He gets a bit of a draw card with the way he fights and his name, or he just undeniably beats these people, you know, with the Bilal method.
Yeah. It's a good, yeah.
But I mean, he's the way he caught us.
The Bilal method is a long road. Yeah. Long, long road. But we look forward now. UFC Fight Night back in Vegas. A featherweight main event. Number 11, Sadiq Youssef from Nigeria, $1.58 favorite, taking on number 13, Edson Barboza, $2.30 underdog from Brazil. Very similar styles, two kickboxers who are massive for the division and tend to slow down in their fights. Barboza, a former massive shredded lightweight, so the fact that he gets down to featherweight is crazy. He's kind of, I don't know if you've seen that meme of that really old black dude and he's like shredded to the bone and it's like Barboza at 60 years old still in the featherweight rankings. So yeah, he defies odds. Yusuf 6-1 in the UFC, less kick heavy but still very technical, bit sketchy defensively, susceptible to jabs and opens himself up when going for it, and he does often, and he has kind of proven himself now to be a serviceable and improving grappler. Barboza, on the other hand, man, his resume is crazy. He's one of the most feared strikers in UFC history, especially with his kicks. 28-fight veteran, 9 knockouts in UFC, only fighter with KOs at all three levels, leg, body, and head. He's fought the who's who. This is his resume of who he's fought, not who he's beat, but this is just some of the matchups he's had. Cerrone, Bobby Green, Michael Johnson, Felder, Ferguson, Pettis, Melendez, Dariush, Khabib, Kevin Lee, Hooker, Gaethje, Ige, Burgos, Chikadze, and Bryce Mitchell.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Bro, he doesn't take easy fights, and it's not an easy fight here for him again. Who you got?
This one's tough. I mean, I'm much more attached to Barboza than Youssef just because, like, their resume, he's such a stalwart.
He's one of my favorite fighters.
Yeah, and he's just, some of those KOs are just crazy. Like, the Burgos one was just bizarre with the delayed KO. Like, just the power.
Scary.
The crushing body and leg kicks that have just put opponents just out of wanting to fight. Like those leg kicks and those body kicks can just turn a man from someone who's a vicious
broke Dan Hooker.
Exactly.
And we know how tough Dan Hooker is. Yeah. It takes a lot to break that man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dustin Poirier couldn't even break him.
Yeah.
So it's crazy what he can do with those legs. So, and I think that's going to be the edge. Like you said, Youssef not as much of a skilled kicker, and I think that's going to be the way Barboza restricts the amount of damage he gets from Youssef, but also the main way he inflicts it. He's going to invest early in the legs, invest early in the body, and then take advantage of some of those opportunities. Like you said, when they both slow down, that head starts to stop moving around so much, and then he's just going to come with a flash of lightning, shin to chin, side of the cranium. Yeah, I'm picking this one.
Head kick.
Yeah, head kick exactly in either late round three or into round four.
That's not exactly then, is it? But head kick KO, that's a hot take. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm going to agree with you, but this fight definitely worries me because Edson's chin has never been great, and he is going down a weight class. He's 37 years old, and Youssef does have power, and Edson does like to get into firefights and does like to exchange. So it does worry me. And also it wouldn't blow me away if Youssef decided to implement some grappling in his much improved grappling game, which I don't really see because I think this is going to end up being a kickboxing fight. And if it is that way, I think Edson is going to show him some levels. So I do agree with you. A big weapon for Sadiq is leg kicks. And no one wins a leg kick with Barboza.
No one wins. You can't go one for one.
No, you can't.
You can't even go two for one.
In terms of his one of his leg kicks will make you limping around for the rest of the fight, and then your leg kicks will have no power. So you better strike first if you're going to play that battle. His boxing is also a little more polished, in my opinion. He has slightly better head movement and works off a jab better than Sadiq. Sadiq is more of like a power striker. Like, he's trying to land a one and then just set up his big hooks over the top. So I think Edson's got an advantage in that department. I do see a back and forth contest until Edson eventually catches Usyk with something in the third round. I'll say a right hook similar to what he did get Burgos with. I think that's what's going to drop him. It's not going to be as weird as what happened to Burgos with him shutting down like 5 seconds after the punch landed. But I think he's going to get dropped, and then I'm going to think he's going to do some follow-up ground and pound for an Edson Barboza round three TKO. So that's where I'm going there.
Nice. Nice. Well, that's another show in the books for us. So enjoy the Rugby World Cups, quarterfinals, semifinals in the NPC, international rugby back in full swing, NFL, and the UFC. So we'll be back for another stat card coming up with that and reviewing everything. And we'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.